a number of times what the Mesillas Yesharim has in Perek Yotes of his classic Sefer, which is called Mishkal HaChassidus. To my mind, Mishkal HaChassidus, I translated it as balance. And it's not an easy task for a person to achieve in the world at large and in general a balanced approach to life, which is able to evaluate conflicting desideratum and somehow attempt to come to some sort of resolution. And of course, we have a guidebook, and our madrich, of course, is the Torah, Chazal, Halacha. So we certainly have a fundamental basis, and we have clear directives and guidelines in order to try to achieve that Mishkal HaChassidus, that kind of balance. And I've said for many, many years and continue to say that my object in being Mechanech Talmidim is to try to produce a normal, quote-unquote, Talmud with this kind of a balance. And as I mentioned a few days ago, that's largely a function of enormous amounts of Torah knowledge that a person has to acquire. Number two, Aseh Lecha Rav, that a person needs someone to guide him, a mentor, a Rav, someone who himself has a wealthy Masorah, Midore Doros. And even after that, one is not necessarily assured that one's going to achieve that izun, that kind of balance. So beyond that, one requires a fair amount of seichel, and that's not so easily acquired. Seichel is something that a person has to work at, has to cultivate, in order to know, just as when one examines a piece of Gemara, and one examines Rishonim, one has to try to understand them as best one can, and one has to have an approach which is glut. Glut meaning that I learn how to think critically, how to analyze, how to evaluate information, but I learn also at the same time, simultaneously, that if someone presents to me a svara that in Talmudic halachic terms is called krum, a krum svara, something which is not logical, which is twisted, which is not in sync and not in tandem with the thinking of the Torah, I have to reject that. Of course, I sit through it carefully, I evaluate it, and all that is part of balance. But at the end of the day, all of the above are not sufficient without Siyata Dishmaya. Person at the end of the day needs tremendous divine assistance in order to achieve that balance. The Gemara writes in Megillah, the Gemara tells us that Yagatu Matsasa Tamin, unquestionably through diligence, through industrious kind of learning, one can achieve tremendous things. But Lu'ukme Girsa, when one wants to establish the proper Girsa, the proper text, and when one wants to remember that which one learned, that needs enormous Siyata Dishmaya, enormous heavenly assistance. But all this preamble was simply just to, once again, underscore the significance of Mishkal HaChassidus, that a person has to try to acquire a balanced perspective on the world. And there's so many issues. We are literally confronted by so many issues that are so, in many respects, many of them are complicated, are complex, are difficult to understand. And we have to try to find the core of each issue and how to approach, and as I mentioned, a number of the drachim, how to go about doing so. That's exactly what I'm also interested this evening in talking about in the context of the two parshas of this coming Shabbos, which are Acharei Mos Kedoshim, but I'm going to focus on the beginning of the Ramban in Kedoshim, which is well known to all of you, one of the most famous Rambans in Chumash. The Ramban comments on the juxtaposition of Kedoshim to Acharei Mos. We know that the two parshas in Chumash that deal with Arayos, Acharei Mos, followed by Kedoshim. And the repetition is clearly for a particular reason. In one case, the Torah has articulated the Arayos, and in the other case, we have the punishments that are meted out for a person who violates these Arayos. But I'm primarily interested in the first pasuk, where the Torah tells us the first two psukim, where Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu in pasuk Beis, "Daber kol adas v'nei Yisrael v'yamatu alehem kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem elokechem." So Rashi has a famous comment. What is the Torah articulating what idea is found here, says Rashi, Prushim in Arayos. Rashi just simply connects the dots. Since the Torah in Acharemos articulates a litany of Arayos, of forbidden relationships, of illicit relationships, so the Torah now, after that lengthy list, tells us we should be Parush min Arayos, we should separate ourselves from these forbidden relationships. The Ramban comments on this Rashi, and the Ramban, first he supports the position of Rashi, but the Ramban says that I believe there's a different perspective on this pasuk. And I'll just read to you, one or two lines of the Ramban. He says, Ulafi dati ein aprishas hazo lifrosh min harayis kedivi harav. He takes issue with the position of Rashi, that Rashi understands juxtaposition as relating to prishim harayos, but rather Ramban says that there are a group of people who are known as prushim. The Gemara speaks about prushim. These are individuals who reached very high levels of kedusha. And the Ramban explains that the Torah has prohibited arayos, machos, asuros, and the Torah obviously permits us to consume meat, to drink wine. So one could easily be led to excessive behavior in any of these areas. One could become a glutton. One could eat in a ravish kind of way, in an unfettered, undisciplined kind of fashion. And even though technically that would be permissible, there's nothing me'ikar adin that would be usur with that kind of behavior. And similarly, the Torah permits us to utilize the greatest koach that we possess, namely the koach hadibur. When the Targum Onkelos translates Vayi Adam Nefesh Chaya, the Targum translates the Ruach V'malala. Our ability to speak is a reflection of the seichel, of the intellect that Hashem gave us, and the ability to articulate ideas and convey them to others. So dibur is permissible. And we're not talking now about Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, Rechilos. Those are outright Yisurim. Those are not permissible in any circumstances. So what are we talking about? The answer is excessive dibur. The Gemara has in Masechet Yuma, V'dibart Abam, and the Gemara Darshins V'lo B'dvar B'talim, almost a kind of Yisur Aseh. Sometimes the Torah formulates Yisurim in positive terms. Just to give you one or two examples, the Torah says, called Tzipor Tahara Tochelu. There's no mitzvah, as far as I know, even though we like to eat chicken soup on Friday night, there's no mitzvah say that one has to eat dafka, chicken soup or chicken on Friday night on Shabbos. So this is an Easter assay, that one should not eat non-kosher fowl, but the Torah is expressing it in a positive way. Or another pasuk, l'anof misashich, that the obligation, apparently, when one lends money to a non-Jew, to a goy, to take interest. U'lachich lo sashich. And according to the Rambam Ramban, whether this is a chi of an obligation, or it's an Isra Aseh. Isra Aseh meaning lav habo mechal aseh. The Torah actually formulates a negative commandment in the positive formulation, namely, do not take interest when you lend money to another Jew. So here also the Ramban says that the Torah has formulated here in Kedoshim Tiyu the following idea, a very fundamental idea from Mar Hashkafa. Namely, one thinks that as long as I don't speak Lashon Hara and Rechilus, I could just go on and literally continue to speak ad infinitum, go on forever. And there are people who have this propensity to go on forever, and even though they don't say Dvarim Asurim Chas V'Shalom, but still the Ramban feels that to speak excessively is something which is inappropriate. So again, we're talking about areas, Achilo Shtia, I'm allowed to eat, I'm allowed to drink, but I should not do so excessively. And we're not talking here now about Achila Gatsa. We're talking about just the person who enjoys eating for its own sake. Not as the Rambam writes, that generally one should eat in order to live, as opposed to live in order to eat. So we're talking about someone who does things in excess, but things that are permissible, technically. But the Ramban formulates here a principle, which is under the rubric of Kedoshim Tiyu, we have to strive for Kedusha. And that means, as he writes, Shenia Prushim in Ha Mosros. We have to avoid excesses in all different areas. As I mentioned, some of the areas, and Ramban mentions other areas as well. So this is the concept, and the Ramban really captures this in a beautiful series of phrases. Kadesh atzmecha b'mutalach. You have to sanctify your behavior, even in areas that are permissible to you. You're allowed to eat, you're allowed to drink, you're allowed to talk, but even those areas, they have to be done with a kind of self-discipline. You know, the Rambam writes already a number of times in Pirshei Mishnayos, and the Rambam writes elsewhere that there are different types of dibur. There's dibur which is of a practical nature. We have to go shopping today. There's dibur which involves interaction between individuals that have to interact with each other, husband and wife, father and son, mother and daughter, father and daughter, mother and son, and the like. And then, of course, the dibur Torah. So the Rambam defines or demarcates dibur as being in within certain sectors. And again, you see from the Rambam, he also felt there's a need for discipline. So the Ramban articulates this mitzvah of kedoshim to you to refrain from excesses. And then he says, if one does not refrain from excesses, Ramban uses a phrase which is absolutely signal, a phrase that is so mind-boggling that if one does not do so, one does not discipline oneself, the Ramban says he's considered to be naval b'shut ha-Torah. I can only translate that as a scoundrel, but he has the Torah's imprimatur. He has not done anything technically that's inappropriate, but at the end of the day, he's a naval. And the Ramban refers to Psukim in Tanakh with reference to a certain personality. So the Ramban is expressing here a very fundamental hashkafic yesod in our entire Weltschau. And that is that even though certainly a person has to adhere to halacha, the person has to try to observe every jot and tittle of the Shulchan Aruch, but then there's another level called Kedushin Tiyu, which is one has to strive for Kedusha, even in areas which are technically permissible, but even there one has to somehow find a way to discipline oneself. And I would like to discuss this, which I consider to be part of Mishkal HaChassidus. This to me is part of this theme that I'm talking about. And again, as I say, the Ramban has reference to several areas. I mean, the Torah restricts man's physical pleasures in many ways. There's certain types of food that are asur, machos asuros. There are times when all food is asur, Yom Kippur, Taniyos. Sexual activity is permitted at certain times, and at certain forms of sexual activity are completely prohibited, but there's always room for excesses. There's always room for individual to somehow indulge in all kinds of pleasurable excesses, and obviously this is what the Ramban calls Novo Bishus HaTorah. Someone who is, as I said, a scoundrel, the word Novo really means probably despicable, but he has somehow the Torah's permission. Because he hasn't really violated any specific din, hasn't transgressed any particular isur. But essentially what the Torah is saying, kedoshim to you, don't overindulge. Don't indulge in excesses. And that's the Ramban's interpretation of the pasuk, kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokecha. So the question that many ask on the Ramban is the following. A very simple question. Why did the Torah formulate this hashkafic yisov in such a general kind of way? Why can the Torah have perhaps laid down very precisely, very specifically, and defined what exactly it felt was inappropriate, namely gluttonous eating, dibur, which is unchecked, uncharted? Why did the Torah say so? And the Torah perhaps could have closed the door to these excesses. And the Torah did not do so. Because one could argue simply that how could the Torah possibly have done that when not all people are alike? We're all heterogeneous in many, many respects. Obviously, there are common elements to all of us. But in the final analysis, we need a certain amount of flexibility in order to provide for different types of personalities, for individual idiosyncrasies. And that's what the Torah cannot possibly do that. But I'll just mention that this issue was already raised by the Magen Mishnah in Hilchos Shchenim, in Perek Yudalim. I just want to read part of the Magen Mishnah who addresses this issue. He's talking about the din of bar mitzvah. The halacha is that the Gemara says, based on the pasuk Yasisa Yashar Atov, that if two people have property next to each other, and one of them is going to sell his piece of property, so who has first dibs on purchasing the property? The adjoining neighbor. The next door neighbor, he has a schus kedima to purchase that property. And if I want to sell the property to someone who's much further away, in a different area, so my neighbor, my shochet, of course there are different factors that are involved here. I'm not going through all the protim of the din of bar mitzvah. But the Gemara says, the asisa yashar batov. It's the right thing to do. To begin with your neighbor, because now if he owns two adjoining pieces of property, obviously that will enhance his overall real estate accumulations. So the Magen Mishnah said the following, in Perek Yudal Hilchos Shchenim, the inyan din bar mitzvah, hu sheterosenu hatzmima, nosna, the Torah has established, midos ha'ish, the Torah tried to establish how people should behave, u'bahanagoso ba'olam klolim, ba'miras kedoshim til. Again, the same principle that the Ramban has, the Magen Mishnah has. Ba'kavona k'mo she'omu chazal, kadesh atzmecha b'mutalach, the person should not become a sensual individual, drowning in sensuality. The Torah says, how should a person interact with other human beings? With yashrus. In a glut, honest, correct way. The Torah really should not have to litzavos protein, to go into detail, to minutia. The pisha mitzvah satorah, heim b'chol eisu, b'chol zman, b'chol inyan. The Torah obviously has an absolute kind of truth to it, and it's relevant in every zeitgeist, in every era, in every epoch, in every geographic locus. U'bechreya chayam asos kein, u'midol sa'odam, ha'nagoso mischalev adafi azman, v'yayishim, and he says exactly what I mentioned a moment ago, namely, there's no way the Torah could have detailed down to the minutia every possible scenario that one can encounter in Kol HaTorah Kula. That would be impossible. And therefore, what did the Torah do? So essentially, I believe what the Magen Mishnah is saying, and I believe this is the intention of the Ramban as well, and this I heard from my Rabbeim many, many years ago already. I heard a kernel of this Yisrael from my Rebbe, Hagoyim Ratzidol Keratovsky Zatzal, who was an astounding personality, had a massive ashpah on my life. This goes back to the 60s, and he also made Aliyah, and also influenced me in that direction as well. Early on, I was a very, very young man, and he pointed this out as well, that if you read now the Ramban, not just here, but the Ramban in another place, in the pasuk of Asisa Yashar Atov Beni Hashem, so the Ramban there writes. I'll read that and then I'll explain the Yisod. The Ramban of that pasuk says, "V'akavona bezeh ki mitzila." The beginning of the Torah tells us in general that we should observe chukim, mishpatim, edus, and the like. And the Torah wants us after it finishes that tein bayin chalasa atov b'yosha Beni Hashem elokecha ki hu ohev atov b'yosha. This is a tremendous directive, said Rabbah. But because he has shown a husky by Torah, call him Hogus Adam, him Shreina, similar to what we just saw in the Magen Mishnah, almost parallel to the Magen Mishnah. The Torah cannot possibly lay out every possible scenario. Namely, all my interaction with my neighbors, the Chomaso, Matano, the Tikuni Ayishu, Bamdino Skulam. So what does the Torah do? Rabbah says, here's the pattern. The Torah does the following. The Torah mentions many, many areas of Cheshev Ishto. Kigom. Lo telech rochel ba'mecha. Not to engage in rechilos. Two. Lo sikom. Lo sitor. Nekoma. Netira. Lo tamal adam reyecha. Lo tekal acheresh. Neseva toko. So now the Torah has listed a litany of areas in the Cheshev Ishto realm, many of which are found in Parshas Kedoshim. And now, after that, what does the Torah do? Chazal Omer v'derech klal, sheyase ato v'yosher eni Hashem. This is the pattern. The pattern is, at first the Torah details as much as it possibly could, and then the Torah issues a general kind of statement, which more or less sums up the attitude that the Torah wants us to cultivate, to nurture, to absorb osmotically from studying all the individual Isurim. What's fascinating is that the Ramban offers several examples to complement this text that we are discussing. When it comes to Shabbos, we know the Torah has very little about Shabbos. In terms of Lamates Melachos, the Mishnah writes in Chagiga that Shabbos, Mikra Muot, V'Alachos Merubos. Very few psukim, but wow, no shortage of a mountain of halachas that relate to Shabbos. But what does the Torah do? The Torah mentions two of the halachas. Lo sevaro esh b'chomo shol seichav yom ha-Shabbos, havara, the lav yotzov, the chalik yotzov, the gemara ha-machlekes, relating to this, and the idea of hotzah is also mentioned, but the other lamates halachas are not found in Chumash. So the Torah mentions specific types of isu halacha, and then the Torah says, "Uvayom Ashvi Tishvos," a general kind of statement that we should rest on Shabbos. And what is the implication of this general statement? To close the door to different types of physical activity which would not constitute a violation of the specific Isur, but which nonetheless should be avoided on Shabbos. So the Ramban uses that example, Shabbos. The example I quoted to you earlier in terms of Chayshe Mishpah, namely, there are innumerable Isurim against Gineva, Zeva, dishonesty in business. But then a general statement, the Asis al Yashiv Atok. And now, the third area is found here in Kedoshim. The Torah first lays down a list of all the forbidden sexual relationships. And then the Torah says a general statement, namely, Kedoshim Tiyo Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So we posed the question earlier, why did the Torah simply delineate every possible scenario that maybe one could possibly encounter? So we answered, because that would be impossible. But that's not, I believe, what the Ramban has in mind. The Ramban is trying to tell us that there are always ways that we can circumvent Isurin. We can always find legitimate loopholes, Baruch Hashem. We're very clever people. We know how to say a shikul tayla and provide some lumbus that will permit us to do all kinds of things, all kinds of skullduggery, without difficulty. So how do we prevent a perversion of the halacha? How do we go about and create a scenario where that will not happen? Because an isur can be circumvented. However, what is the Torah trying to do? The Torah wants to give us a certain hashkafa. The Torah wants to give us a certain direction. And when we take all these surim and conceptualize them into one notion, then hopefully we have prevented the possibility of devious, underhanded violations. And those basically, you can tamper with the letter of the law, but it's much more difficult if you are a real Ben Torah and have absorbed the Reach HaTorah, you'll have much more difficulty tampering with the spirit of the law. So what has the Torah done? In these three areas, fascinating, in the area of Shabbos, in the area of Arayas, the area of Chayshe Mishpat, the Torah lays down initially, delineates a litany of Yisurim. And then the Torah provides us with a general kind of tone and direction that this should be our model in our lives. What I call the Mishkal Achsidus, namely a balanced kind of approach. But that balanced approach is founded upon an examination of all the aforementioned items, be it in the area of Shabbos, be it in the area of Arayas, be it in the area of Chayshe Mishpat. So Maredi, Hagdai Natsidlo Kanatah, Zatzal, told me the following. He said, and this is how he expressed the idea of the Ramban. Normally, when we speak about mitzvah, say, positive commandments, they're usually associated with a chetesh or mitzvah. There's some ritual article that's involved with them. I mean, there's a specific chafetz that's used when I perform the mitzvah, whether it's tzitzis, tefillin, estro, matzah, shofar. That's when it comes to mitzvah say. When it comes to loving, negative commandments, those are not expressed through the medium of a concrete article. And that's quite clear. And in all of the isurim that I mentioned here, and quoted by the Ramban, there's no chetzesh or mitzvah. The general mitzvah say in each case sets up a kind of concrete chetzah shel mitzvah, which becomes the vehicle through which I realize all the isurim. Now, who is the chetzah shel mitzvah? The answer is yours truly. We are the chetzah shel mitzvah. The chetzah shel mitzvah becomes the gavra, becomes the individual himself. And as we become the chetzah shel mitzvah, and if we examine the three areas that I mentioned, we will see this. The isurim against various forms of sexual activity are in order, but there's an intention in all these isurim. And the intention is, kedoshin tiyu, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. The intention is to fashion an ish kadosh, a heilige mensch. The isurim against various types of work on Shabbos are quite clear, but they also have a purpose. The way Ramban writes throughout his parish al Atero, the purpose is to fashion a human being who believes in Hashem is Barach, who has emuna in the Briyas Ha'ilam, that Hashem created the world. The general sequence of Tishvayt gives a certain direction, a purpose to all the Yisurim. I, who am Chetzer Shal Mitzvah, I'm supposed to become a Maimon, someone who believes. And in a similar fashion, all the Yisurim against all forms of theft and slander, Lashon Hara, Rechilus, Yashrus in business, not being dishonest, are all expressed clearly in no uncertain terms by the Torah. But the general mitzvah seva, tisa, yashrav, atev, offers a directive. I have to become an honest personality. I have to become someone who can be trusted. I have to become someone who is a confidant. That they look at that person, the way the Gemara says in Yuma, the famous brisa, that you see an individual whose behavior is exemplary, especially in the area of Be'el Machavero. So, Ma'abrios Emes Olav, what do the people say about him? Look at this person who learns Torah. Ru'u kama misukadim drachav, kama noy masav, the olav ne'ma v'yisrael ha'shem v'chai espoir. That's someone that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam unquestionably delights in. So, essentially, we are expressing, I believe, what is the gist of this Ramban and the Magen Mishnah. Namely, we have individual Isurim, but they are given a tsura, they're given an overall kind of direction by the Torah's summing up, by the Torah's sachatol. Whether it's Vasisa Yashiv Atayv Yechashem Mishpat, whether it's Tishbois when it comes to Shabbos, or Kedoshim Tiyu when it comes to Arayot, this is the Mishkal Chassidus that one has to realize when one's confronted with all types of choices that one has to make. And the Torah essentially tells us, who is the Chetzer Shel Mitzvah in all these areas where there's a potential for Rachman Litzlan, for violating all of them? We become the Chetzer Shel Mitzvah. And that's what the Ramban is suggesting here, a very fascinating Ramban that suggests that a person has the ability, and this only comes about, as I mentioned before, with enormous amounts of Limud HaTorah, enormous amounts of being Mishamish Tamine Fachamim, enormous amounts of acquisition of Seichel, and finally, at the end of the day, one needs incredible Siyata Dishmaya. So in that vein, the Torah also tells us, probably what Rabbi Akiva calls Zekal Gola Batera, the Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So I was Zeichel many years ago to hear the Magid of Yerushalayim. I heard actually several Magidim. Every Friday night, I used to walk with my brothers, Shlita. I used to walk with them to hear Hagoyin HaShom Shadron, Zechatag Lebracha. One Friday night, he spoke in Yiddish. Next Friday night, he spoke in Hebrew in different places. And it was really amazing to hear. But there was another Goyin and also incredible Magid who came to the yeshiva. He came to Itri, to Darshan quite often. The Rosh Yeshiva was very friendly with him. And that was Hagoyin of Yanka Galinsky, Zechatag Lebracha. A lot of his material is now being published both in Hebrew and in English, and it's kedai to hear what this giant, who's a small, diminutive kind of fellow, when he would come to the yeshiva, they had to bring a bekala, he would stand up on the bekala, and in order to be able to speak, otherwise you wouldn't see him. You see from Rabbi Yankiv that very big things come sometimes in little packages. Don't judge a book by its cover. So Abhyanka Galitsky once told the following story, and I want to say it over. There was another Magid in Yerushalayim whose name was Rabbi Tzion Yadla, very famous Magid. So he once told over that in Yerushalayim there was a group of men who convened a secret kind of society, and their goal was allegedly to care for each other. Every member of the group would look out for his fellow man and vice versa. What could be wrong with such a club? Sounds like ideal. An ideal kind of setup and venue. At that time, the Rav Yerushalayim was the Maril Diskin. Abishua Le Diskin was a Rav in Brisk, and later came on to Yerushalayim. We have people here who probably know about his personality better than I do, but I know him from his Svarim, from his Chumas, and the like. So Rav Ben Zion Gaber didn't know, should he join this club, should he not join this club? So he went to ask the Gadol HaDor, Agoyin Abishua Le Diskin, Zatzal, should I join this society? So he asked him, what's it all about? He described to him what their interests are, what their goal is. And he said to Rabbi Shua Leib that obviously it's based on the Atulach Kamocha. What could be bad about this? Sounds ideal. So the Maril Diskin replied, and this was not expected on the part of Rabbi Tzion Yadla. He didn't expect this kind of response. He said, no, I don't think you should join because they're not really involved in loving somebody else. Basically, each one loves themselves. And the relationship is founded upon the principle of what the Gemara calls in Baba Tzia, Shmor Li Vesh Malacha. You watch my back, I'll watch your back. That's nothing more than self-worship. Today I'll take care of you. Tomorrow will be my turn, you'll take care of me. However, he said, our Hashkafa is way beyond that. We have a mitzvah that commands us, Lo Sikom, not to take revenge against someone who's wronged us. Why? Because our obligation is to love all of Klal Yisrael, regardless of what they do for us, regardless of what their hashkafa is. You're absolutely not permitted to join this society. Wow. He was taken back, Rabbi Tzion Yadva, by this response of the Brisk Rav, of the Maril Diskin. But this, again, is a very telling kind of vignette which demonstrates for us how a great Torah giant seems to reject something that seems to be a very noble kind of cause and somehow perceive it as being nothing more as a vehicle for self-gratification. That requires a goyim, that requires enormous seichel, that requires enormous shimush tamei chachamim, that requires enormous siyata d'shemaya. When the Torah says v'ahavta l'racha kamocha in this week's parasha, it's much more encompassing. It's not simply the golden rule, if you will, which is a secular kind of notion, but rather it should define our entire persona. The Ramban has a diuk in Chumash in this week's parasha. The Torah does not say v'ahavta es v'racha kamocha, akin to what it says in the context of avas Hashem, v'ahavta es Hashem elokecha, v'chol levavecha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol miyodecha. V'ahavta l'racha kamocha. Because the Ramban explains that the love of Hashem is of an absolute nature, without any qualifications. But when it comes to my love for another human being, there's no way that a person can love someone more than he loves himself. So the Torah cannot say v'ahavta es, but it says v'ahavta l'racha kamocha. But the Ramban goes on to explain, and this is also found in the Rambam, in Hilchos Aveilus, the same translation, both the Rambam and the Ramban. The way I want to be treated by others, that's the way I should treat them, but I should go out of my way to give literally whatever I have to offer, the Ramban says, whatever talent I have, whatever monetary ability I have, I should help the other person, irrespective of what that person has done for me. It's not that you do for me today, and therefore I do for you tomorrow, tit for tat. No, but it has to be a ahava, literally, b'li gvulos. Mayim rabim lo yichu l'chanas esahava, u'naharas lo yishtefua. Im yitin ish kol hom beso v'ahava, boz yavuzela. So now let's get to the story that I heard from Hagoyin of Yaakov Galinsky Zatzal. So he told the following story. There was a Rav in Vienna whose name was Rav Shimshon Wertheimer. And he lived in the end of the 17th century, part of the German Roman Empire. And these countries were never known for their friendship towards Klal Yisrael. But unfortunately, that period was probably known more for all kinds of libels and the like generated by the church hierarchy. And so the officials of the church called on Rav Shimshon Wertheimer to participate in the kind of dialogue to defend Klal Yisrael, because they argued that we are elitist and we somehow see ourselves as being above others, and as a result, because we call ourselves the Am HaNivchar, God's chosen people, that's something which is clearly, from their perspective, absolutely unconscionable. And it's true that Chazal already speak about this, and the Torah speaks about it. See the pasuk says, Hashem said, I separated you from others. And that didn't seem to faze them. And the dialogue, of course, was a waste of time, because Hashem Shavuotheimer knew very well he's not going to convince the non-Jewish majority of our chosenness. That's impossible. It's not just a Herculean task or a gargantuan task. It's an impossible task. No way that it could possibly be successful. So he has to demonstrate that the Jew is different, that we are unique ethically, morally, spiritually. We're distinct people. Our thought process is different. Everything about us is different. And he had the opportunity, because he was called to this dialogue, and the king said, I must have clear, irrefutable evidence that you are different from your non-Jewish counterparts. You have to prove that to me conclusively. So Rav Shimshon agreed, and he said, my lord, he told him, I only asked you that you prepare two lavish dinners, one that you're going to prepare for Jews, and one you prepare for non-Jews. And I'll show you a clear distinction between the two, between the Jews and the non-Jews, because we live a life that's dictated by Torah Seinu Akdosha, by a holy Torah, and it was done. So the following Tuesday, they declared a Yom Tov. All the Gentiles would attend a gala dinner in the palace from 6 to 8 in the evening, and that would be followed by a kosher dinner that would be supervised by Rav Shimshon Wertheimer. For Jews, from 8 to 10 in the evening, the first dinner was 6 to 8 for the non-Jewish population, and the dinner following, 8 to 10, was for the Jewish population, and he said that the reason why the meals had to be separated because of dietary reasons and the like. So everyone appears in the palace on Tuesday evening, ready to partake of the lavish meal. People are seated. The waiters bring out the food. There was only one problem, one small minor problem. No cutlery was made available. No spoons, no forks on the table. An announcement was made, no one could eat anything without a spoon or a fork. So people see all the mouth-watering food, but there are no kelim, no utensils with which to eat. They begin to grumble. How are we supposed to eat without utensils? Where are all the utensils? And shortly thereafter, the waiter comes out with the silverware. Everybody's given a spoon, everyone's given a fork. But there was one minor problem. Each spoon and each fork was 2.5 feet long. Lengthy spoons, lengthy forks, maybe similar to the Gemara in Seita, when, if you remember, Batishach Hasamosa Vatikochel Batya, Basparo, extended her hand, and it turned out her hand was considerably longer than she thought, the Darkness. So here we have lengthy spoons and lengthy forks. How are they going to eat, they wondered. So they tried every way to remove the food from the plate, put it in their mouth, it simply didn't work. They could not, with such long utensils, get the food off the plate in order to feed themselves. So they sat there for 2 hours, they're staring at this sumptuous meal, course after course after course, without forks, without spoons, they couldn't eat. And so they starved, they didn't eat. Now, these people were maybe not exactly but they weren't people who didn't have any seichel. They were going to go wait around to see what is the rabbi going to do for his co-religionists. How's he going to handle this kind of situation? If the Jews were given a regular sized cutlery, they would cry foul play. What's going on over here? At 8 o'clock, the Jews arrived, but the food was prepared under strict kashrut supervision. They went to the washing station, they washed, they made hamotzi. The waiters served the food, the platters laden with all kinds of sudas, shlomo b'shaito, all kinds of delicacies. And many of these people are not eating properly because they were poor Jews, as poverty certainly prevailed, as it did in many other countries. But alas, lo and behold, there's no silverware. How are they going to eat? Especially if it was announced that without a spoon and a fork, you can't partake of the food. A few minutes later, the waiters bring out again 2.5 long foot silverware. There's no bazaar. What happened a short while ago with the non-Jewish clientele now happens to the Jewish clientele. So this was an insurmountable impasse for the previous group that appeared in the scene. Somehow, in a moment, the problem was resolved. Each one picked up a spoon and fork and began to feed his neighbor. And 15 minutes after the dinner began, all the food was gone. The non-Jewish Gentiles that were watching through the window, they couldn't believe what they had seen and the lesson that was being conveyed to them. So Shimshon Wertheimer then approached the king in a reverent kind of way and said to the king, "My lord king, does your highness not see the distinction between a Jew and a Gentile? Why is it that the Jew is able to immediately think of a solution to this vexing issue? You know why? Because we are completely and totally suffused and enveloped by one tzibur. The ahavta l'rerecha kamocha. We don't only think of ourselves. We're always aware of our fellow Jew. Is it any wonder that the solution was so easy to find?" This last story I heard from Hagoyim, Rav Yankov Galinsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. But this story is very endemic of what we're all about, namely, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. The concept of Arevim was something which is built into our very persona, but this also is part of what I call the Mishkan Achsidus, part of the balance that we have to try to achieve. And therefore, any issue that even though it may seem to be an issue, but in reality, the issue can be resolved with, number one, Siyata Dishmaya, with Seichel, with the level of Yimud HaTorah, and many other similar kind of approaches that only come about if someone is a Ventura. I'll just end by referring to why the issue of Mishkan HaSidus is so difficult. Why it's such a complicated issue? Why it's so difficult to get to some resolution, some median, intermediate kind of position when one confronts issues? And I'll comment on it utilizing a famous comment of the Archaim HaKadosh in Nachar Emos. Since I spoke about Kadoshim, I'll say something about Nachar Emos. The first pasuk in Chumash, in the Nachar Emos, the Torah says, Nachar Emos Shnei Bnei Aaron, B'Korvosam B'Bnei Hashem V'Yamusu. The pasuk began by saying, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe acharei mos shnei bnei Aaron," after they die. So why does the Torah at the end of the pasuk say, "The kavatsim bnei Hashem vayamusu"? The Torah already said it earlier that they died. Why the necessity to repeat this idea? So there are many reasons the Chazal give why they passed away, but the Archaim HaKadosh has a very well-known explanation, which is Al-Pi HaKabbalah, Al-Pi HaChassidus, that you know why they died? Because Vosso B'Znei Hashem. Their sin consisted of permitting their intense emotions of longing for Hashem Yisbarach to cause the actual death. And those their neshamas left because of the love of Hashem Yisbarach. It's meduk in the pasuk. Because Vosso B'Znei Hashem, as a result of their closeness to Hashem Yisbarach, Vayamusa, they died. The word karva means karev, to draw near. What does that mean? So on the one hand, we know, the Rishonim write about it when they speak about tefila. When a Jew davens, we should come to the madrega of hispashkus hagashmias. We should divest ourselves of anything corporeal. We should reach the level of hishtakus hanefesh, an outpouring of our souls. Or as the Navi says in Yecheskel, v'achayos rotzo v'shov. They were running back and forth. The Chayes HaKodesh. Running back and forth. Those Ratzo means a surge forward. But Shov, of course, means as well, have to come back. So there's a constant tension between Ratzo and Shov. So what happened in the case of the children of Aaron HaKohen? Their sins were caused by the Karvasan. the closest to Hashem was in a matter of Ratzo, without Shov, without the return to worldliness. And there's a lot to talk about in this particular topic. I'll just give one example of what I'm referring to. The Gemara in Chagiga, famous Gemara, speaks about Abba Nistasu the Pardes, four people under the Pardes. So the Gemara says, Benazah, Hichitz, and Nifka, he gazed and he died. Rabbi Kiva, Nichnas B'Shalom, V'yatza B'Shalom. Gemara Chagiga, Daf Yudalit. That he entered B'Shalom and he left B'Shalom. So it seems that the whole distinction between Rabbi Kiva and his colleagues was the fact that he was Yotzei B'Shalom, he returned in peace. But as far as the entrance, there's no distinction. So why does the Gemara underscore that Nichnas B'Shalom? They all were Nichnas B'Shalom. So my Rebbe, going to the Nisim Alpha Zatzal, said, because he was Nichnas B'Shalom Amanas Lotzes. His intention was to leave. He's going to, if you will, putting it in Archaim terminology, Archaim HaKadosh terminology, his entrance into the paradise was Eirachanami, to become close to Hashem Yisbarach, an outpouring of the soul, but not to remain at that point. Rafael mentions that Zatzal also talks about this at great length in Isha Alacha. But rather, Rabbi Kiva entered because the Chatzila, he knew he's going to take whatever he acquires in the heavenly spheres and bring it down in a worldly kind of fashion. I know basically, person has to simply try to acquire Kedusha, has to be in the gather of Ratzo, but the Ratzo has to be with the intention of coming back and living in this world and functioning in this world. And of course, that's not a simple kind of balancing act to do. And this issue we have seen here in the Corona days, I would say in full form. Many who have a very strong interest, and all of us have a strong interest in davening b'tzibur, all of us want to connect to Hashem Yisbarach, want our tefillos to be responded to, where the Gemara says in Daf Ches and Brachos, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moed B'tzibur and Shorabim. So there's that ratzo, but sometimes that ratzo can be so overwhelming and so overriding that we forget about Shov. We forget about the fact that there are health issues, there's Mitzvah HaBriyut, there are health directives. There are obviously halachas of nishmatim over nafshoseichem, and right away there's a conflict. So how do we resolve the conflict? The answer is mishkal achsidus. One has to develop a proper balance, and it's a juggling act, an act that requires someone of great skill, of great dexterity. I'm talking about dexterity in halacha, dexterity not only as a magician who can do all kinds of magical tricks and the like, but dexterity in nuanced thinking, in thinking which requires a lot of very, very careful and methodical and deliberate kind of machshava, but that has to be based al pi a masera, al pi shimush tamni chachomim, al pi the fact that a person becomes a literally someone who is someone who has absorbed enormous amount of Torah knowledge. At the end, of course, it requires a lot of seichel as well. So here, this notion of nichnas b'shalom, amanas lotes b'shalom, or Rabbi Akiva, thus we have to somehow try to unite both elements, both the ratzo as well as the shov, where the person gets a tremendous awakening on Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day of the year, but it doesn't mean that you have to remain there. You have to take that Kedusha and take whatever you acquired and bring it back to this world at large and utilize it to the extent that one can. And in order to elevate one's material matters, in order that one should elevate one's Chashem Mishpat into action, one should elevate one's interaction with other human beings, that I'm the Chaver, I'm the Makom, and all this is a function of Mishkal Achsidus. And this, I believe, is the lesson that the Ramban in Kedosh and Tiyu is articulating, the lesson of the Bhagavad Mishnah, and the lesson as well of the Archaim HaKadosh, and what Agoyin of Yaakov Galinsky told over in the context of the story of Yahavterach Kamocha, of Rav Shimshon Wertheimer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And this is what we have to somehow try in our own lives to put together as best we can. And it's, as I said, a rather challenging kind of feat. It requires enormous amounts of limud Torah, yashamayim, masorah that one should be recovered from rabbeim, meshamish tamid chachamim, asir lecharav, seichel. But ultimately, the Rebbe has to give us siyata d'shmaya that it should be zocheh to this nishkal achasidus.